Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 143.
This week on the podcast, you'd think an Oscars this political would have been less boring, and yet...
The GOP's DHS Greek tragedy leaves us asking why they feel so compelled to destroy even things they love.
Brian Williams hater Bill O'Reilly is totally just jealous because his fake combat story is totally fucking lame.
And Jeb Bush successfully proves that his foreign policy agenda isn't like his brother's at all. It's actually more like Herman Cain's.
Hillary Clinton and every single nobody in America is running for president in 2016.
And in case you were wondering whether a swallowed camera pill might end up in your vagina. Oh, wait, you weren't wondering that?
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. Here we are, coming to you on a Monday evening, Tuesday morning, when you listen to this.
That's right.
We had to watch the Oscars last night.
We first tried to watch the Oscars, and then there was a blackout.
That's right. Neil Patrick Harris is rising onto the stage, and out goes the power at our friend's place, who lives in Marina Del Rey, which is not close to where we live.
No.
And nobody else had a television. So we had to make a big company move to West Hollywood, which is like at least a 30-minute drive.
It was an elaborate adventure.
Right, and we had to pack up all the food because we hadn't cooked yet. So like,
right.
We like packed up spaghetti, uncooked spaghetti and meatballs.
We had a whole dinner party
like,
situation planned
right.
That fell apart the moment the power went out.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, oh, it might not be back on till 1 a.m. and it's all the way to Playa. Thing was that every other building besides the one we were in
building.
Had power.
But I did later on Facebook see people that were without power.
Like interspersed around town.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Little known fact though, the time to drive in Los Angeles is when the Oscars are on.
The time to drive is not right before the Oscars are on or at any point leading up to the Oscars. As soon as they're on though.
Once they start, you're in the, you can do whatever you want on the road.
You can be just driving all over LA at that point.
Yeah, that's
it's
what
like Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was not an interesting Oscars, but it was a very political Oscars.
It was. So that was interesting. It wasn't, I mean, I don't know. I didn't hate it as much, I guess, as everybody did.
Well,
we didn't see
a lot of it.
It didn't feel as long to us because we missed at least 45 minutes of it. So that helps, I guess, because it went way over and everybody was complaining about how long and boring it was. And we were spared that, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was and also, because we were so far behind, we got to miss all the commercials, we got to, you know,
miss
we could
speeches.
Fast forward through any speech we didn't want to see, any musical performances that we weren't super into,
yeah.
There was a country performance in there.
Didn't watch Tim McGraw for 1 second.
Certainly not.
No.
We literally watched him for 1 second and then
realized what was happening.
Moved on with our lives immediately.
Yeah.
But there were some exciting political speeches. Patricia Arquette, during her acceptance speech, talked about wage equality, which has been an issue of much discussion recently in Hollywood.
Stacey Dash on Fox News
was not having that.
Really pissed off about
that. I know. She thought it wasn't classy.
No.
Like, you know what's not classy? Being Stacey Dash on Fox News.
Remember
being
when
on
you
Fox
were,
News, not classy.
Remember when you were on Celebrity Circus?
Remember
like when she was
when
like
you
practicing
were
trapeze
only
arts
famous
on television?
For being in Clueless?
Yeah.
Another time that you weren't being classy. Like,
yeah.
I may love Clueless, but
yeah.
I'm not trying to pretend that's a classy move either. So,
nope.
Stacey Dash, slow your roll.
Yeah.
But then also, well, first of all, Citizen 4 won Best Documentary.
Which
and
I'm going to be watching soon. It's on HBO Go as of today.
Exactly. And it was the filmmakers delivered a very sort of pointed message about sort of the NSA and spying.
We are all Edward Snowden, I think, didn't they say that?
Yeah,
or
something like that.
Or something,
so,
you know, like,
it was a very sort of aggressive, not aggressive, but like, you know, overt political statement that they made. When Common and John Legend won for Best Song, they talked about incarceration rates in the U.S. and how that sort of disproportionately affects Black men. And so they talked about, and they delivered they had a very moving performance of Glory, their song from Selma.
Yeah.
Chris Pine was moved to tears.
Sure was.
There was a big controversy on the internet about why they cut to Chris Pine. Like, a lot
crying.
Of people were moved to tears. I know, but they were
crying.
Like, we got to find a white man.
They showed a lot of other people, though. Like,
they showed one other person.
I don't know.
They showed
Oprah.
They showed Oprah, and they showed the guy who played Martin Luther King
in
Selma.
Don't try and say his name. I'm not going to. You should.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. His name, it's Oyelowo or something? It's
David
Oyelowo.
I think, maybe.
It's so hard.
Yeah, hard.
But in any case, they showed them, too. But it... So then in the final sort of confusing cherry on top of this orgy of free speech was Graham Moore, who won Best Screenplay.
Yeah, for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Imitation Game. And delivered a speech that seemed straight out of an It Gets Better video.
Yeah.
Turns out he's not gay.
Not gay. He's not a gay man.
He was just a man who felt weird as a teenager.
And in fact,
he was a straight person who suffered from depression or something.
And if you don't believe that, he was actually competing in that category, oddly enough, against one of his ex-girlfriends. Not specifically as a screenwriter, but she was one of the producers on Whiplash.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, unexpected turn.
Because, big time.
Well, the thing was...
My mom alerted me to this, by the way.
Well, it was the kind of thing where it was so in the framework of an It Gets Better video that... Yeah. You just were sort of like, oh, here's a gay person delivering an It Gets Better line. Because we've just come to expect that that's sort of like the framework that kind of message comes in.
Yeah. Well, and it wasn't about gayness, though. It was just about
weirdness. Feeling weird. Being
Which
weird.
Staying I weird. Like.
Sure.
I
no,
like
I,
that.
We're broadening it out. But other people can be depressed, too,
but
guys.
Other people feel weird. But my mom really got me some good gossip today. Because everybody who I told that was, like, refusing to believe
me. Yeah, no. You were the only person that I heard that said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're the only one who knows.
It's true.
So your mom was really doing the people's work.
Yeah. Yep.
But apparently the ratings weren't that great anyway for this Academy Awards. They have been, I think, kind of having a hard time locking in a younger audience. You know, the oldsters have nothing better to do.
I feel like they have not gotten this right yet, and it's annoying because they supposedly that was one of the things that expanding it to a potential of 10 films.
Right,
was going
to
get for them. And instead, now you just get anywhere between 7 and 10 of the same sort of, like, you know, old person, like, artsy films. Like, and I saw some of them, and I liked the ones that I saw. But, I mean, you know, supposedly we were supposed to be getting sort of, like, you know, where was the best, like, sci-fi film in the mix in there?
Yeah.
Like, would it have killed people to have, like, Interstellar, like, just be, like, the 9th, even if it wasn't going to win anything? I mean, like, you know, it's just, and I just feel like there's just such a disinterest on the types of films that get nominated for these things that's why nobody watches them.
That there was the biggest uproar about were films that were discussion points for younger audiences, because Selma and the Lego Movie, oddly constantly getting thrown together in discussion of the Academy Awards, were both movies that people thought would likely get nominated and were movies that were sort of flashpoints of discussion or of interest to younger audiences and did not get nominated. So, you know, also, they have not cracked the code that, like, the Golden Globes gets a much lower viewership because it's not interesting and no one cares about it. But, like...
But it's fun.
It's a topic of discussion because they have fucking Tina Fey and Amy Poehler hosting it.
Right.
You gotta... Neil Patrick Harris...
It was fine.
Is
but
fine,
he didn't really do anything.
But he's just sort of, like, the latest in a long line of people that... He's not particularly relevant to young audiences.
No, he's not.
He's most famous for a role he played as a teenager.
Right.
I mean, However long How I Met Your Mother went on, that no one under the age of 50 was watching. Exactly. Like, however long that show went on, like, he's famous for being Doogie Howser.
That's right.
A show that even I was too young to watch. So, like, this is not the direction to go in. No.
Yeah.
In any case, in real news, we might be coming to you soon from a country that has no Department of Homeland Security. Now, before you panic.
We
didn't have one before 2001.
I was going to say, we came to you from that country in recent memory.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
We all can remember a time... If you were old enough to listen to this podcast, you were old enough to remember a time before the DHS.
That's right.
So, like, first of all, take a breath.
Yeah.
Now, it is hilarious that this is happening because this was the brainchild of Bush-era architects.
Totally.
This was, like, their big thing. They were going to, like, fight terrorism by starting a new department instead of just using the departments that we had better.
We had more.
Instead of listening to the CIA, they were just going to invent a new department that dealt with homeland security.
Yeah.
And what they use it to do now is to keep Mexicans out of America. That's sort of what this department has become, it seems like.
Yeah.
And we might be without it soon because... We talked about this last week.
Yeah.
We talked about how, you know, they're trying to attach some amendments to a funding bill for the DHS that would strip all of these executive actions that Obama has been passing on immigration.
Yeah.
And they're refusing to take those out of the bill. And the Democrats are like, well, we're not going to pass a bill that strips away all of these things that we're in support of.
And bless their hearts, because this seems like something in a past life they would have just yeah, decided to ultimately vote on just because, like,
they still might.
Whatever.
They have four days.
They still have 4 days. I don't think they're going to do it, though. They should. Because I think they just would have done it by now.
Right, that's true. Yeah, if they're going to let you walk all over them, they just will lay down. Right. They're not trying to front and then not do, you know.
Yeah.
That's not them.
And I think that they know that the blame is not going to fall to them. I mean, all the public polling is that it would go to congressional Republicans, which is what happens when you run both chambers of Congress.
And also what happens when you have historically caused the shutdown in recent memory.
Right.
I mean, the reason that
Your shutdown
this is your strategy.
Right.
Like, people know that this is a GOP strategy. So it doesn't matter whether or not, you know, ultimately the sort of filibuster is being caused by the Democrats. This strategy of, like, pursuing a bill so, like, you know, it's like pursuing funding the government but forcing you to strip out Obamacare funding is the same deal. It's a strategy that we could have just funded the government and not had to repeal Obamacare, and that would have been the cause of the end of the last shutdown. Like, we could have just stopped the last shutdown.
Yeah.
This is the same deal. Yeah. They can strip these things that are not directly related out of the bill, and the Democrats will vote in it because they want to fund the DHS.
Right.
They love overreaching security as much as anyone else. So, I mean, this is like a no-brainer. It's an easy fix that everyone has, and they've been hitting the PR waves hard on it.
But they just know that if they cave on it, it will be seen as them caving on it from their base, anybody else.
Yeah. No, but that's all that they should care about. I mean, their base is who they need to please.
Right.
And
they're crazy.
Who else is there?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have any plans. They don't have any agenda.
No.
So they might as well just keep putting nonsense on to a vote and then being like, they won't let us pass this crazy thing that they would never, you know, like, it's like,
Welcome to the last 6 years, fuckers.
Exactly. Well, it's you're going to mandate, like, it's like mandating something crazy in order to have something practical happen. Like, we'll let you keep your roads if you all take a trip to the moon tomorrow. Like, that,
right.
That's not how you run the government.
Nope, it's not.
It's not it. So
I would
like
to go to the moon, though.
It sounds tomorrow, fun. Even, potentially. It's better than work.
Especially if I'm forced to.
Anything to get out of the office, you know?
God, really?
Anything.
Yeah.
But so in any case, the shutdown, 30,000 employees would be just, like, having to go home. There'd be a bunch that would just, like, have to work with no pay.
Right.
Which is an annoying thing. But also, Mitch McConnell's kind of pissed, I think, because he's been trying to force votes on this for a while. And they don't have enough votes in the Senate. And Boehner has just sort of, like, washed his hands of the whole thing. He's sort of
if
the shutdown happens, this happens. We did our part. As if his part is the same part. Like, as if he thought that was an equal contribution.
Right.
Like, this is a House with, like, a huge majority where they can just, like, pass any crazy nonsense that they want. And now he's like, well, Mitch McConnell's just not holding up his end of the deal. Like, go fuck yourself.
Let them have that out, though.
Yeah. That's all on them. And the Democrats have been hitting the media pretty hard with the message that this is not going to be their fault. And I don't think anyone thinks it will be. So,
no one does.
And they're sort of like, because of that, they're in a position to be like, well, fuck you guys. Like,
yeah.
What do you want us to do? Like, they have no incentive to cooperate.
No.
So, and they also know that if they pass this bill that strips away all of these immigration,
it's going to get vetoed.
Yeah. So, like, why bother?
Yeah.
It's a whole charade for nothing.
Really is.
Meanwhile, speaking of immigration policy, because, you know, Obama's been trying to sort of, he's been doing these executive actions that have kind of opened up some avenues for people that have been here. But he's also been sort of, you know, we've talked about how, you know, we have a lot of deportations going on because of the Obama administration. And as you probably remember from last summer, there was like a huge crisis where, like, all of Central America decided to come
and
seek asylum here because there was, like, massive violence going on in Central America. And then we had they put people in detention centers because of that. People were just waiting around in detention centers. It was, like, unaccompanied minors. It was mothers and babies. It was, like, all sorts of people who you don't want in a detention center.
Yeah.
Just, like, waiting for nothing.
Yeah.
Waiting to be sent back to their war, gang, violence-ridden country.
Yeah.
In any case, a U.S. district judge just issued an injunction on Friday that was like, you can't do that. Like, you...
Good.
Because they were basically saying, like...
Well, the ACLU sued the DHS
because they were basically saying, like, we're doing this as a preventative measure so that people won't think it's a good idea to come here because they'll know that they're going to end up, you know, in these like, facilities.
Right.
And the ACLU was like, you can't use incarceration as a deterrent. Like, those people, like, that's not how it works.
Right.
And a judge agreed with them.
Yeah.
And so now they're going to have to stop randomly violating everyone's rights by forcing them to...
so sad for them.
I know. Forcing them to be in these horrible facilities.
Oh, God.
You know, lack clean underwear, whatever they were always going on about.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of discussion of underwear for...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But so, that's good news. In interesting news, I guess. And well, not unexpected, but...
The showdown is underway. Because, as we said,
The
Senate passed Keystone. The House had passed it, and it was going to the Senate, and they just got around to it, and it's been done, and it's going to be on Obama's desk tomorrow, and the veto threat has already been promised. Yep. So, here we go.
Well, and this is going to be his third veto, but experts are sort of looking at this last term of his, or this last session of his, as a sort of, like, potentially very veto-heavy session. Because, this is the first in what they expect to be a long line of things that get past the House and Senate that are just banana pants crazy.
Right.
That he's just going to be like, no. But this is definitely going to be the most statement-y one he's done.
I was
going to
say, right. I mean, if you just said it was the third one, I couldn't tell you what either
of
the first two are.
No.
But this one, people will know that he's vetoed this.
And they don't have a filibuster-proof majority. They're five short of that in the Senate. So
already reported to you which... Terrible Democrats
voted for it.
Some of the ones that you would think, some of the ones that maybe you wouldn't think, but they're idiots. You can go back into the archives if
that's
you
want
to know who they are. But the showdown begins.
It's going to be sort of interesting, I think, because this is, you know, a lot of the things that we sort of frequently criticized George Bush for doing with executive authority are suddenly going to be things that I think Obama has to start doing, like with these executive actions. And Bush was not a big vetoer because he didn't have to be a big vetoer. It wasn't like he was getting crazy legislation. But I feel like, you know, during that era, we talked a lot about sort of the executive branch kind of like overreaching because they were. And this, I think, is a different situation because the Senate and the House are so dysfunctional. And like the executive branch really has had to overreach just to like keep things happening and going on.
Well, that's what I... It's going to be interesting.
This is going to be interesting to see how this is received because the left was so critical of Bush doing it for what I think were fair reasons. And I'm sort of curious to see how this sort of like repeat vetoing and all this is going to affect the gridlock everywhere else.
I agree. It's also going to be interesting to see how much legislation the Senate Democrats just try and keep him from having to veto, because they sort of, I mean, the Keystone Pipeline had more than 60 votes, so they were okay. They don't have the filibuster proof, but they were able to sort of like get around the, you know, this new sort of like 60 margin that you have to have.
Right.
But it'll be interesting to see how much they block knowing that it's just going to get vetoed anyway, or whether they just like send it to him knowing that he'll veto
it. Just sort of lay down and be like, you do what you do.
What looks worse, him vetoing it or them blocking it all the time?
I mean,
would think probably him vetoing it, I guess.
Yeah,
so it makes more sense for them to keep it off of his
desk.
They
have the ability to retake the Senate in the next election cycle, so they are going to want to look active.
Yeah.
Like, unlike, you know, they're going to want to be able to talk about sort of the specifics of why they are veto, you know, why they're blocking certain legislation and why, you know, they're sort of filibustering whatever, not, you know, silent
not
filibustering,
right.
basically, all of this stuff. Like, that's going to be something that they're going to want to have on the record so that they have some talking points for the next election cycle.
Yeah.
So I think, and it looks terrible just to have a president who all he got to do in the last 2 years was veto everything. But that's why I think some of these executive actions are going to get exciting.
Yeah.
Because in the process of vetoing everything, he's just going to be making his own policy, basically. And it's not going to be for the same reason Bush did. Bush was doing it to be an asshole. It's going to be because there's no legitimate legislation coming through.
No laws will be passed
otherwise.
No laws are getting passed otherwise.
Yeah. So that's why I think they're going to probably try to keep him from.
Well, that's why
to
he
veto,
did the
so.
Immigration one, anyways.
Yeah,
because
like
there was no
we need fucking we need immigration reform.
It'll be interesting to see how. I don't think we have this on the document, but I think it'll. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out too, because a judge last week blocked that his immigration executive order. So that's now also going to be in the courts on top of this whole thing that's going on with the defunding of the DHS.
Every other piece of legislation he's ever tried to pass also in the courts.
Exactly.
People are just trying to sue the shit out of this administration.
Really, yeah.
Going crazy. One thing that nobody can say has not been a huge success, though, is Obamacare. And we told you last week, and we're going to tell you again this week. And
we're just going to keep telling
you. Why? Because we got final numbers, or we got more preliminary numbers.
Yeah.
Last week, we didn't have the full tally of how many people signed up during open enrollment.
Yeah.
Now we do. It is at least 11.4 million.
Yeah. The goal was 9.
Right. The goal was 9. Well, the goal was originally 13, but then they were like, actually, that's definitely not going to happen. But then the goal was 9, and now it's 11.4, which...
Yeah, they split the difference.
They split the difference.
Almost exactly.
Well, and last year it was 7 million. I mean, this is a huge improvement on last year.
Yeah, I know.
And they didn't have to do a whole, like, big PR thing this year. They were just sort of like, sign up for Obamacare, and everyone's like, all right, let's do that.
Yeah. Well, and they are also, they think that they're going to have a lot more signups in, because I heard what they're, or at least what they're thinking about doing, is that if you didn't sign up last year, you're already going to, you're going to have to pay the fine. They're not waiving the fine, obviously.
No.
But what happens, what is going to happen is people are going to find out that they're going to have to pay that fine when they do their taxes.
And they're going to suddenly want to sign up.
And they're going to let them do that.
Yeah.
Basically.
They should.
Because, and they should, right. So
these are arbitrary deadlines. Why?
Right. These deadlines are arbitrary. So we'll end up being more than 11.4 because a lot of people are going to get fined on their taxes and they're going to be like, oh shit.
Right.
And then sign up immediately. And then, so that 11.4 number is going to immediately increase by the end of April. I think they're giving people to the end of April. If they ended up with a fine the last time, they're going to let them do it.
But on Sunday, there were the most signups of any day in Obamacare history.
Yeah.
More than a million people signed up in the last 9 days of the enrollment period. As we said, young people,
always
huge
happens.
Procrastinators.
That, mm-hmm.
They were just signing up at the last second, up a storm, like
right.
usual. But so this is exciting. And this extension that we're talking about is happening in about half of the states.
Yeah.
But they're sort of expecting that I think others will kind of pick up on the
and,
trend.
You know, there have been a lot of little things that people have, like, latched, opponents of this have latched onto, which are all, on some level, valid. But I think the larger point is that people have healthcare, and people are liking the healthcare. You know, there were a lot of the right-wing nuts this week were having a lot of honking outside of our soundstage, by the way.
It's like a huge fake... Oh
boy!
Wow! This is getting exciting. Oh, and a shouting is commencing.
Oh, my Lord.
How exciting.
Well, that happened.
People...
You know, something like 800,000 letters went out, like, with the wrong tax information to people and stuff like that. And I get all of those things, but, like, those are things that happen when you have, like, a system like this. Those things will ultimately get straightened out, or they will always continue to happen. But the point is that people have healthcare.
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, those are not reasons to sort of latch onto this and, like, want to throw the whole thing, like, you know, down the drain. Because it's like,
we'll
figure those things out.
Logistical issues are not a reason that you throw away healthcare reform.
Right. Exactly.
There are reasons. You just are like, you know what? Maybe next year, let's not send out the wrong letters.
Let's not do that.
Yeah. That's an easy fix.
That's right. Yeah.
So simple.
We'll handle it, guys.
Yeah.
But
so anyway, things are going great. And we're going to remind you every time that
weekly.
We have new numbers to remind you in.
That's right.
So get ready for that. That's going to be the jobs numbers that I like reporting.
Right.
Won't be like the jobs report where we just give you fake numbers and then talk about those for a while.
Yeah.
Meanwhile. Here's a hilarious thing that's going on.
I love this.
So Bill O'Reilly has really been on Brian Williams' case of late over these allegations that Brian Williams was lying about being in a helicopter that got shot, shot down or near a helicopter that got shot down when he was in the Middle East war corresponding. Bill O'Reilly is also a man who likes to tell a tale of his time in combat during the War of the Falkland Islands in the 80s. He was a reporter for CBS News at the time, and he was in Argentina during the war,
when there were a lot of protests and things like that going on, supposedly.
During the Falklands War.
Yeah.
And that was a war, though, that took place on the Falklands Islands, which are, like, really far away even from Argentina and definitely from Britain.
Yeah.
They're not near anything in particular. In any case, he, for years, has been weaving tales that put him in varying degrees of proximity to combat during this war.
Right. Well, and he talks a lot about, like, how because he was there during the war, he gets it. He gets war more than everybody else does.
I've been there. That's really what separates me from most of these other bloviators. I bloviate, but I bloviate about stuff I've seen. They bloviate about stuff they haven't.
That's right.
Turns out that everyone who's bloviating is bloviating about something they have not seen.
Right.
Because
including
he is
Bill
not
O'Reilly.
A man who has seen combat.
Nope.
He is a man who's been to Argentina.
Sure.
Good. I've been
so
there too.
So, yeah.
So that's a thing that we've all accomplished.
Uh-huh.
He is a man who went to Argentina in the 80s
to
even report on the fallout of the Falklands War.
He was, yes.
He was certainly in Argentina.
Yeah.
A place that the war didn't really take place.
Yeah.
Because it was taking place on islands that are like hundreds of miles off the coast of Argentina.
Yeah.
Here's why we think he might not have been there. Because there were no Americans there.
Right. Well,
the only reporters that went to you know, embedded into the, you know, with whatever, with the British military force or whatever in the Falklands,
yeah,
were British reporters. And right. there was nowhere else for anyone else to right. get there.
Well, and CBS, a bunch of CBS reporters are right. like coming like, out of the woodwork who are like, that didn't actually happen. And also, much like Brian Williams, it's this tale started as a different tale.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, we talked a lot about that with Brian Williams, how he initially reported it correctly. And Bill O'Reilly talked about when he was a CBS reporter at the time during the Falklands War in his book, The No Spin Zone, which is from 2001. And there was no mention of this war that he was in. He said that he was a reporter at the time. He arrived in Buenos Aires soon before the Argentine
junta.
Thank you. I almost said junta. That's wrong. And I knew what it was. So I don't know why I almost said that. But.
Well, because you're not. Speaking Spanish. I was reading English,
and then
I
had to switch. Yeah, exactly.
No.
Surrendered to the British, ending the 10-week war. And that was, like, the end of that story.
Now, by 2013, he had a very specific tale about, like, a cameraman that got hit in the head and was bleeding, and they had to solve, you know.
Yeah.
So, by 2013, he had some very specific anecdotes from his time in combat at war. And in his book, and in the memory of other people, he was... near some things that were maybe termed riots, but were really more like protests.
Protests,
with a few
like
rioting elements
in Argentina, at the time, at the end of the
people
war.
People were angry that the junta kind of like, you know, laid down for the British and sort of like let them walk all over them. And so there were a bunch of angry people in Buenos Aires that were protesting.
Right. But and protesting is not war.
Well, so another tale that he was weaving was about how violent these protests got, because he likes to tell combat tales about these protests also, that I guess he believes... he can tell in addition to his combat time in the Falkland Islands. But so he tells like really dramatic tales about like being in violent protests and no one else from CBS during
no,
that
his
era,
own bureau didn't even
else,
report that that happened.
Right. Was sort of like, well, I guess there were a couple of people that got arrested. They threatened tear gas once. Like that's basically what everyone was saying.
Right.
Yeah. So it turns out that even Bill O'Reilly, a man who currently hates Brian Williams for making newsmen everywhere look bad, is shockingly, as a man who bloviates on Fox News all day, not a man who's telling the truth about his own combat background.
Nope.
Because he doesn't have one.
Doesn't have one.
Like Brian Williams. Not even like Brian Williams. Brian Williams was at least in a war zone.
I don't.
Bill O'Reilly.
Wasn't even there.
Bill O'Reilly wasn't even there. And he picked also the worst war to lie about.
I don't lie about being in
the
Falklands.
Falkland Islands.
Come
like,
on.
Come on. Like, no one has been to the Falkland Islands. No one even knows how to get there. It's like... it's madness.
Oh, man.
So in summary, he's an asshole.
That's right.
That's the summary.
And a hypocrite.
And a hypocrite. Yeah. He's really been hitting the Brian Williams thing hard.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting... and here's the thing. Is everyone knew this about him? Like, people who listen to talk radio have confirmed for me that, like, almost everyone on Earth knows he's been lying about this Falkland War nonsense for years.
Yeah.
And, like, knowingly has been, like, harassing Brian Williams, like, while everyone else has been like, dude, everyone knows you're lying about your stupid nonsense, too.
Yeah.
Like, everyone... this is, like, an open secret in the talk radio verse. Universe of people. Don't be in that universe,
word to
the
wise, people. Don't lie about things like
this. Well, here's the thing.
There are ways to know that you're lying, and then you're just the lying idiot.
If I were to tell a story about my combat experience, it would in no way impact the way that news is told or remembered in America.
Right. Yeah.
If you are a reporter who currently sits behind a desk at a major news station, that's a time to not exaggerate your story. I get that you would want an exciting war story as a person.
Yes.
I would certainly make up a war story if I had been sort of near a war zone. Why not? It sounds exciting.
Yeah.
I would not do that, however, if I had been a reporter in that war zone and I was telling a national audience my story.
Right.
Like, at a dinner party, I'm willing to make up a story about whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Now, I think I will sort of differentiate here a little bit because, like, I hate Bill O'Reilly and I think that he's
lying
asshole blowhard. But I think that he's a hypocrite, obviously, because he's been, you know, going
attacking
so hard on this Brian Williams thing. But I don't...
he's not a news anchor.
He's a
pundit.
Anchor who, like, I don't think people... yeah, he's a pundit. I
mean,
like, I think
here's
that
I think
pretends to be reporting the news,
I think,
but he's not.
He is a person that believes he is reporting the news to an audience that believes he is reporting the news.
Fair enough.
So, like,
and
in his
that.
Own world, I think that this is just as asshole-ish a move.
I agree.
I get how, in the fact world, Brian Williams sort of should be held to a slightly different standard because he doesn't work for a news network that openly lies all day long.
Right. Like, I don't think we should have to care whether Bill O'Reilly was actually in the Falklands
or
not. We can carry on knowing that he is a hypocritic asshole. But, like, I don't really care whether he resigns or not over this. Like, there's a lot of people who are calling for him to sort of,
that's
like, never,
irrelevant.
You know, be on the air again. No. And it's sort of like, it really gives a rip.
Well, he wasn't telling, like, he's not telling the truth about anything else.
Anything, I know, right?
It's not like if it weren't for this story, we could totally trust Bill O'Reilly. Like, that's not how it works.
No,
it's not. I'm shocked to hear that he has a background as an actual reporter in the first place.
Me too.
It's a little surprising and concerning.
I know.
But, no, I definitely think that Brian Williams should get held to a different standard.
Yeah.
But I do think that is just as concerning, considering that there is an audience that gets what they believe is news from a man who believes he is reporting the news, and that he was able to think to himself, well, Brian Williams is an asshole for not telling the truth. Have I ever told you about my war days back in 82? Like, that's a crazy thought process that man was having.
Yeah.
And he's a man who's not having a lot of thought processes.
No.
Meanwhile, speaking of men that aren't having thought processes, this is the greatest thing that happened in the last week. Jeb Bush, a man who is related to two presidents.
Right. And he's the smarter of the siblings.
The smarter of the siblings. Although
supposedly,
I'm starting to doubt that. He's the one who didn't go to Yale.
I agree.
Did you notice that, people?
Like, right.
He's a Bush.
He was always supposed to be the adult, though.
Yeah, well, the adult in the Bush family should get to go to Yale.
I agree.
If the idiot child gets to go to Yale,
yeah,
they have to put him, he has to go to school in Texas? He has to go to a state university in Texas?
No.
They are rich people, guys. Rich people don't go to those schools.
Yeah.
Rich people go to Yale.
Go to Yale.
That's where you go.
Yeah.
He couldn't even go to Yale? That's disappointing. In any case, moving on. He decided, since he's running for president, to just deliver a foreign policy speech last week at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, because he thought, why not? I should show the people that I know stuff. Turns out that was a mistake.
Big
he doesn't,
mistake.
He doesn't know stuff.
Doesn't know anything.
No. First of all, his speech was like filled with errors, and we'll go through in a second and tell you what the errors are. But also, he didn't even seem confident that he knew the facts that he was telling people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so like the fact that it was filled with errors was not surprising because it sounded like he was making it up as he went along anyway.
Yeah. Well, and he also, the speech was bad enough, but then there was a Q&A after it.
Oh my
and he
God.
Basically just didn't know anything
about
in regards
anything.
To anything that anybody asked
him
a question
about. He's at like Herman Cain levels of knowing about the world.
Totally.
That's the man who coined Uzbeki, Beki, 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 Bekistan. So,
that's right.
First of all, he doesn't know how to say Boko Haram.
Oh.
He called it Boko Haram.
Right.
This is a speech. He's a man who's running for president
right.
in a speech.
And this is a thing. What's concerning about this is that everyone knows how to say
everyone.
This. This is not something like where Herman Cain, like, Joe Blow might not know who the president
Uzbekistan.
Of Uzbekistan is. Like,
yeah.
I get that, Herman Cain, like, on some level. Granted, you're a person running for president, so I do expect you to know that.
Right.
But, like, you could just go outside your house and ask a person on the street if they know what Boko Haram was.
They
would know.
If you've been reading a tabloid somewhere, you know exactly what Boko Haram is. Like, that's not hard to know.
Yeah.
No, and this is, like, this is, if you are delivering your first major foreign policy speech, like, maybe
get
ask someone if you can't figure out how to pronounce something,
that,
or make
right.
sure, have one of your many seasoned advisors from both your brother, your father, and Reagan's presidencies tell you how to pronounce it. Because as he spent a lot of the speech trying to differentiate himself from his brother and father,
didn't
being like, I'm my own man. But not only, the Washington Post this week published a list of his advisors, all of whom were from the Elder Bush, the Baby Bush, or Reagan's administrations. And also, the only way he was able to differentiate himself was that he had no clear ideas on anything.
Perfect.
None at all. Like, his brother and his father wanted to go to war. They were ready to go to war, even if there was no reason to.
And they could tell you.
They had a country to go to war in. They could tell you that they were ready to go to war in that country for reasons they had made up. But they were ready. They were prepared with a specific agenda that had to do with randomly going to war for no reason.
Totally.
He doesn't even have that much of an agenda.
No.
He mixed up Iran and Iraq.
Yep. He also added an extra zero onto the number of how many people are
in ISIS,
because he said they have 200,000 men and they actually have 20,000 men.
That's a big difference.
That's off by a lot.
And at one point he referred to the head of ISIS as the guy that's the supreme leader or whatever his new title is, the head of the caliphate.
Yeah, didn't know his name. No.
Which is also his name is basically like Baghdad with an I.
Yeah.
Like, his name is Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi.
Yeah.
That's...
al-Baghdadi. You can remember
people
that.
People say that one.
Yeah.
That's not Ahmadinejad. Like...
No.
You don't have to, that's not a hard one.
No.
So in any case, he also didn't really have any thoughts really on how to combat ISIS. Other, his most specific thing he said was, we have to develop a strategy that's global that takes them out. Mm-hmm. First, the strategy, you know, needs to be restrained, needs to restrain them, tighten the noose, and then taking them out is the strategy.
Taking them out is the strategy. That was when he was asked about what the strategy was.
Right.
Taking them out.
Taking them out is the strategy. It's a simple one.
Right.
It's a pretty,
it's a one
pretty straight
point
ahead
strategy.
Pretty straight ahead strategy. Uh-huh. It just involves
eliminate
let's get
them.
Rid of them.
Yep.
I don't like them. I want them gone.
No.
I don't want to talk about how.
Nope.
How is not the important question.
Mm-hmm.
At least you know I have a plan.
Yeah.
The plan is to get rid of them. And then he did coin a new term, liberty diplomacy.
Ugh.
That sounds horrifying. I don't know what that is, but it sounds like a very scary
thing. It's the type of diplomacy where you go and you tell everyone how
wonderful America
wonderful
is and
America
how we should police the world.
And you just have to do whatever we tell you
right.
to, diplomatically
right.
speaking.
Right. That's where we tell you that it's okay that we're coming to bomb you for no reason.
Right, exactly.
And then he also at one point said that the NSA surveillance program was, quote, hugely important.
Oh, boy.
Didn't manage to differentiate himself from his brother on that, since his brother invented that program.
Yeah.
So that didn't work out in anyone's in the favor of his line that he was trying to be different. But then also, his best received lines were, like, really vague and, like, about American exceptionalism and things like that. Like, at one point he said, we shouldn't be as pessimistic as we are. We're on the verge of the greatest time to be alive. We're in our ascendancy as a nation. We just have to start acting like it again.
No, that doesn't mean
First
anything.
Of all, one, I have a quibble with this. We're not on our ascendancy as a nation. We are definitively on the descent. Everyone knows that. We're not the nation in charge of the rest of the world anymore.
No.
There's every other nation is in charge of the rest of the world. China's in charge of the rest of the world. Russia seems to be in charge of a lot of things for a place that has nothing but corruption going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Germany seems to really be in charge. And that's concerning for a lot of reasons. One place that we're not in charge of is the world.
No.
But this
and is... guess what, guys? That's okay.
That's okay. We're still gonna... You're still gonna get to go to Starbucks. Everything's gonna be fine.
That's right.
It's, you don't need to be, it's a big burden to be in charge of the world. It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You keep having to go meddle in other people's nonsense.
Yeah, just, who wants it? Who
it's
needs it?
It's a pain. It's expensive.
So expensive.
You know what your tax dollars don't need to be going to? Is
meddling.
Random nonsense meddling.
That's right.
That's, war is expensive, meddling is expensive.
Our budget for meddling is too high.
Too high. So in any case, he has a lot of plans for a great America.
Yeah.
That don't involve him knowing anything about the world.
Nope.
But certainly involve America's being exceptional again.
When you have liberty diplomacy, you don't really need to know anything.
You don't need anything else.
Mm-mm. Oh, God. This is good. We're continuing on our 2016 trend. We're just going to keep going with it.
Yeah, we're not going to stop with 2016 coverage.
It's the most interesting thing that's going on right now.
It's the most interesting thing that's going to be going on until 2017.
Right. I agree.
I'm willing to talk about this nonstop until then. I don't feel like other
news
is important.
Yeah, we're going to.
So this week, New York Magazine updated their list of potential candidates, which I have been keeping a close eye on, as you might imagine.
Right.
Mostly because I'm pissed that Liz Warren is not on their list.
Right. They're basically anyone who is sort of like unequivocally like saying that they are not going to do it, they have left off the list. Even though she's basically like in second place.
Exactly.
Granted,
in the polls.
Granted, a far second place.
Right, but
like,
a growing second place in all the polls.
Yeah.
But so the Democratic field is a little depressing.
It's depressing.
It's Hills.
Yeah.
Not surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
Biden is on there. Jim Webb, who is a centrist one-term Virginia senator who used to be, who worked for Reagan.
Yeah.
Like, he was a Navy secretary under Reagan, so
gross.
Bernie Sanders, who is not going to win, but is a delight. And I would love...
Correct.
I would love...
Big delight.
That's who I'm going to support if Liz Warren doesn't step into the ring. Hopefully he runs not as an independent, but in the primary, because that's where he's needed.
Yeah.
That's Sanders for president. Anyway.
Yeah.
I have
the t-shirt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have the t-shirt. I should get a t-shirt.
Yeah, you should.
I just never...
I have a Warren one, too.
Wear the t-shirts.
Yeah.
I need more... Maybe a tote bag or something, you know?
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah, they probably have it.
Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York.
Mm-hmm.
He's an interesting case, A, because he's definitely, like, in the Clinton sort of mafia.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that he'll run against Hillary, and a lot of people think he's trying to set himself up for 2020. Assuming that she doesn't win.
Right.
But also, his father, who also was the governor of New York, was very indecisive about whether he was going to run. There was buzz around him potentially running for president, and he never did. A lot of people think he might kind of follow, and his father actually died recently. Mario Cuomo died recently. Right. People think that he might sort of run in the same circle, sort of run into the same wall as his father, where he's just like too indecisive to make a decision.
Yeah.
I want to point out that were he to run for president and win, our first lady would be Sandra Lee.
Oh my God, that's right. So that's almost good enough.
It's almost good enough, but it's also almost the worst thing I've ever heard.
I know.
So that's concerning, and also I feel like a reason why he maybe couldn't be president.
Yeah.
Weird taste in women.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
That's also enough that you sort of are like, would that make him a Republican president? Like, she just seems too conservative to be the first lady.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it. In any case, people know he's interested in the job. He released his memoir, but then didn't promote it. Then recently just accepted a brand new term of governor, to be governor. So it's like he just got back into office.
Yeah.
He just got reelected. He's been traveling a little internationally, though.
Interesting.
And he's been doing a good job of, like, keeping everyone from, like, having a hilarious breakdown in Albany. But also, like, I'm mad at him. So deal with that, mm-hmm. Andrew Cuomo. Martin O'Malley, we've talked about him a lot.
Governor of Maryland.
Former Maryland governor. He's hired some ex-Hillary staffers to advise him, but he's also a big Clinton supporter too. Like, all of these people are in the mafia.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, he doesn't, there's nothing there.
No.
I mean, like, he's maybe lovely, but he just doesn't have anything to sell himself as, like, a real competitor to her. And there's just nothing, there's no.
The Times basically said he's best known in political circles as a competent statistics quoting wonk who tends to underwhelm on the stump, and that he lacks a ceiling cracking selling point.
Yeah, that's
that it, sort of sums it up. He's just some guy. Yeah. Just like a white guy.
Yeah.
Just like any white guy.
Yeah.
Which, good for him. He did it.
But like, yeah, that's right.
But, like, that's not a great way to become president.
No.
And then there's Brian Schweitzer, who's fringe candidate Brian Schweitzer, who New York Magazine described as a left-wing libertarian, which I guess sort of sums it up.
Yeah, I think it does.
He's against gun control.
Yeah.
He does not believe in the Affordable Care Act, but he is pro-single payer.
Right, because he thinks that it's a corporatist bill,
which it is. And we absolutely agree with him on that, but it's sort of a hilarious point for some, like, random, like, Montana governor to be making.
The one thing that I will say about him is that he has already, and, you know, you only know this if you're, like, you know, really paying attention like you and I are, but, like, he has come out very, very hard in an anti-Clinton stance.
Absolutely.
So he... And he was a governor of a state. Granted, it was a state that doesn't have people living in it, so that's a problem, I guess, for him. But I mean,
he doesn't have a constituency from that state.
But. No, but there, you know, I mean, I think that he, on some level, could be taken seriously if Hillary wasn't there.
If
but
he
of course,
wearing
she
bullet
is.
Ties.
But I mean, like, and stopped wearing bullet ties. But like, he's.
I think he makes you know, we talked about him months ago because he was really the only Democrat who was standing up and saying, why do we just accept this inevitable, you know, like, it's like we have a royal family that we're just sort of, like, letting roll all over us. Like, why would we accept this two-family state that we live in?
Well,
like,
there's no
reason that someone else besides the Clintons can't be found to run for president.
I just don't, you know, the one thing that I will say is that, because we're now done with the Democrats, by the way, and if you think that that is a sad list, then you're right.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I will say is that whether Elizabeth Warren runs or not, there are other competent Democrats who I would say should run for a litany of reasons.
Yeah.
Least of all, that every single Democrat, whether they're a Hillary supporter or not, claims that they want a strong primary.
Yeah.
She is only helped by a strong primary. She has ran a shitty campaign in 2007 and 2008. She ran a shitty book tour when she released that not too long ago. And if she runs a shitty general, then that's going to be a problem. Yeah. And the way that to maybe not do that is to
run a real primary. Yeah.
And she's not going to get this running against these chumps. I like a couple of them. But, like, it's just, they're not
My
it.
Favorite part
they're
is
not
that
it.
Brian Schweitzer, by the way, last summer compared Dianne Feinstein to a prostitute and said that Eric Cantor seems gay like all Southern men.
Yeah.
So his campaign is not necessarily
But the other thing that I think, that Republicans have proven recently.
Is that you can say anything.
is that you can say anything, but at least in terms of a primary, running a good primary against Hillary Clinton and losing would be good for your standing
yeah.
in the future.
Right, this
you've
is
set
why...
up your organizations now. You all of a sudden have people on the ground in all of the states that you're running in.
You have name
you
recognition.
You have name recognition. You know, I mean, this it's been going on with the Republicans for ages.
Well, I mean,
it
we
didn't
talked
work for Hillary,
week
but I mean, like, you know.
About a bunch of randos that are planning to run basically so that they can get, like, book deals and higher speaking fees when they're
right.
done.
But I mean, this is what happened with, I mean, this is what happened with Mitt Romney. This is yeah. what happened, you know, this has happened a few times. You know, John McCain ran twice. You know,
the Republicans have a system where you run once and you lose, and then you run again, and it's your
turn.
And
I'm not saying I necessarily favor that.
That's a dumb system
at all. But it could be a good way for someone who is maybe thinking about, like, being a real candidate at some point to, like, try and run a good primary, yeah. who actually has, like, some name recognition that would be able to sort of, like, put up a bit of a fight. I think what everybody is scared of is that they don't want to be seen, and this is just sort of like a, you know, the Clintons have won, I guess, on this level.
The
but
Clintons
people don't want to be seen as
going up against the Clintons.
Going up against them and having to say something bad about them. Like, nobody wants to say anything bad about
they
the Clintons.
They run a mafia. We've said this many times on the podcast. It's mob-style mentality.
Right.
Because they are the most powerful Democratic family in the world.
Because there are even other women who I think would be great if they ran.
Yeah.
A lot of people talked about, like, Amy Klobuchar. Like, she
exactly.
sort of is, like, a real person who could run, but, like, probably doesn't want to say something bad
Hillary.
About Hillary Clinton. The same with Kirsten Gillibrand, like,
yeah.
you know, I mean, there are people who I think should be running in this primary that are just not, and the only reason is because sort of like the specter of Hillary Clinton, like, is sort of like weighing the whole thing down.
Well, that's why
and that
I
is
thought...
not, that is not a reason not to run, people.
No, and I also feel like that is what is so irresponsible about her running again, is that it actually, like, puts a nail in the coffin of the Democratic Party in a way that she can see happening. We all can see this happening.
Right.
Her being in this race knocks everybody out of the race. You have a bunch of dumb people like Chuck Schumer talking about how primaries are no good for the party. That's not true.
That's
everybody
not true.
Knows that's not true. That's the way that you avoid being Bruce Braley'd is by having a primary.
Yeah.
Everybody knows this. We showed it again in the midterms if we didn't already know it. But, like, her being in the field prevents anyone else from having a real shot at running a real campaign and getting the kind of exposure that they need and the kind of support that they need to be a real candidate.
Yeah.
And there are real Democrats out there. We have some great Democrats
yeah.
right now, but none of them can go up against the organization that is this, like, Clinton mob.
Right.
I mean, that's...
But what I'm saying... I totally agree with you about her even being in the race.
No, but those people should run anyway.
They should run anyway. That's that's my point.
I feel like there's two issues. One is that I feel that the Clintons are being irresponsible about how they control the party. I also, though, feel like some of these people just need to fucking man up.
Yes.
Like, you're in politics.
Right.
Deal with...
Like even
there
if you...
There is what's good for the party in the short term, and then there's, like, the continued relevance of the party.
Well, right.
And, like, what you lose by having a royal family running the party is the continued relevance. It's continuity.
Right.
You cut off a whole generation of people.
Right. Well, and the thing that I think that also should be noted is that if you run in this primary against her, and she wins, which she probably will anyway,
right.
You're never going to have to deal with her again anyway. So it doesn't it doesn't do anything bad for you to have said something maybe like to gone against her in a campaign, because she's going to you'll never have to run against her again, and we're never going to have another Clinton again after this either, and for another at least a couple decades potentially, you know.
So Chelsea gets her act together.
You're not losing anything by having to run against
her. The other thing is, I think from her perspective, it only benefits her organization if there are strong primary campaigns that can be folded into hers when they fold, you know, when they fall
Very
apart.
True.
Because her campaign, as we know, is going to be a mess.
Yeah.
She is not a person who is running a good campaign. So it would help if a Brian Schweitzer was running a halfway competent campaign, and obviously he's not going to be the president, and I get that, and that's fine, but maybe he would have some competent people who could then be like, you know what, we learned in our process of, you know, running against you was things that are not stupid, and maybe we could tell them to you now that we're working for you. Like, this is how campaign work happens.
Yeah.
If you start with the candidate you want, and you wind up with the candidate you have. So it only helps her, a person who has historically not ever successfully run a campaign, to... you know, have the benefit of other people's organizations on the ground folded into her campaign ultimately.
Yeah. Oh, God. Now we move on to the Republicans. And
if you
think this list has less than, like, 20 people on it...
You're wrong.
You're wrong. It has all of the people on
This is the list of people who have indicated that they're thinking of running. Not the list of people who even people were talking about who might not run. Mitt Romney is not on this list. Paul Ryan is not on
this
list.
These people are all
people
who are
legit
currently or
planning
thinking
to run.
Of doing it. Yeah.
Here's the list. Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, Rand Paul,
sure.
Marco Rubio,
mm-hmm.
Ted Cruz,
mm-hmm.
Scott Walker,
mm-hmm.
Rick Perry. Now
mm-hmm.
that's where you think, okay, we've done it.
Then
Next round. Bobby Jindal, Mike Huckabee, John Kasich, Peter King, George Pataki, Rick Santorum, Carly Fiorina, Lindsey Graham, Ben Carson, Mike Pence, Indiana governor, who you've never heard of,
yep.
Bob Ehrlich, former Maryland governor that you've never heard of,
yep.
John Disgusting Bolton. Mustache Bolton,
uh-huh.
Sarah Palin, and Donald Trump.
Wow. That, I need all of them to actually do this.
For God's sakes, let's make sure we have a debate with all of them. Can we get a
debate with that whole crew?
Because that sounds like a dream.
That's a dream.
That's the whole party, guys.
I know.
That's everyone.
Yeah.
That's the entire party was like, this year, let's not do what we did last time and have a divisive primary.
Yeah.
So they were all like, I'll run and save the party.
Right. Exactly.
And then they all did.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened. And this is, and I said this last week, but I want to say it again because I feel like it's an important point. Some of these people are not going to win.
Right.
But there are...
George Pataki, not going to win.
But there are... There
are people who could win.
There are like 6 or 8 people on there who would not shock me if they won.
No.
I mean,
well,
some of them may be a little bit more.
People who are polling really high in certain states only. Like Lindsey Graham is currently leading the polls in his own state, South Carolina.
But he was in Iowa last week.
Right. No, but like that's he's like Newt Gingrich. Like Newt Gingrich was leading the polls in Georgia when he ran. He won Georgia, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
He didn't win anything else or do anything else in his entire campaign except go on a zoo tour and go on vacation. But I mean, he was able to siphon that whole state off, which is a big state, just by walking into the campaign and being a rando.
Yeah.
Like this is like a dream of a field.
It is.
It's and none of them are real people.
No.
This is not, there's not a single, I defy you to find a single real person on this list.
I know.
Well, I'm going to look at it one more time. Jeb Bush, as we've just shown, is barely a person.
Yep.
Chris Christie.
Is already failing.
He's already failing.
Well, he's hardly started and he's already failing.
Chris Christie is the Rudy Giuliani of this cycle and he's absolutely not going to be the president.
Yeah.
Rand Paul is a libertarian crazy person.
Yep.
So like, he doesn't share anything with any of these people. Yeah. He's totally rent. Marco Rubio is an asshole.
He's
up to crazy shenanigans and has weird dry mouth and can't deliver a speech. Ted Cruz is himself, and
crazy.
He's Canadian.
Right.
So, like, he has the problem of not actually being qualified to run for president.
Uh-huh.
Scott Walker, no college degree, slash just a terrible human being who has no record to run on in his own state that would in any way appeal to anyone outside of, like, the fringe right.
Yeah.
Rick Perry.
Perry.
Exactly. Can't remember the third thing.
Nope. <Mm-mm.
laughs> And looks too much like George Bush.
Right.
He's wearing
those glasses.
He sounds like George
Bush. Helping.
And that's too many
he
Bushes to be in the race.
Yeah. I agree. Also, too many Texans in this race.
Too many Texans. Too many Texans in the presidential race. Bobby Jindal. First of all, there's a lot of failed Republican response deliverers on this list.
Yeah.
And he is one of them.
He's also a failed exorcism giver.
So true.
From when he was in college, lest
that's
we forget.
Mike Huckabee, the teddy bear that hates everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And a populist teddy bear. I mean, his economic platform really doesn't share anything with these people. He just shares that he hates gay people and women.
Yeah.
Which is not enough to get elected on.
No.
John Kasich is sort of the Scott Walker of Ohio.
Right.
He has another state which people, like far fringe right people love it. And everyone else
but
is like, you
Ohio.
Are an asshole.
Yeah.
So that's Peter King.
We're already to the end of the reasonable people.
A congressperson who's not going to be the president and that we talk about all the time. And then everyone else is just like, you know, Ben Carson. Not going to be president.
Yeah,
he's a Tea Party celebrity that we can't figure out why he's famous.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be the president.
Nope, he's not at all.
One can only hope that Sarah Palin gets up and moves up in that field because we don't have a Michelle Bachmann in the field currently.
No.
And we need one.
Yeah, we need her and Donald Trump to really get in there.
Really get in there.
Yeah.
In any case, this is a dream. Less of a dream is this is how politics gets you. This is what's so scary about politics.
Yeah.
Remember how just seconds ago we told you how great it would be if Elizabeth Warren would run for president?
Right. We may know the reason why she's not.
Yeah. Apparently in December, Clinton also sensed that people might be thinking that Liz Warren would be a great president.
Mm-hmm.
So she tried to draw her into the mafia.
Right. Well, this is the thing that the Clintons
are good at. This is how the Clintons do it.
Yeah.
Well, this is... I have said this before on the podcast, but not recently. The Clintons in person are lovely. So, like, if you meet a Clinton... You immediately want to be like friendly to them because they seem like very nice people. They're good with people. They're good at reading people. They're good at working a room. So if Hillary Clinton invites you to lunch, you probably walk away and think, well, that's a nice lady. And that's probably what happened to Liz Warren when she got invited to lunch at the home of the Clintons in December, where Hillary Clinton was there to steal all of her progressive ideas and think of how to reframe them as conservative ideas and then not lose the spirit of the argument.
But this is the thing. Elizabeth Warren's ideas don't look good on Hillary Clinton.
No.
She's tried them. They don't look sincere. She's tried them already.
Well, they can't look good.
No.
Because her best friends are like bankers and Wall Street people.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a way to look good.
Yeah.
You can't pretend that you love something that you hate. Like,
yeah.
That's, and so, you know, people said the meeting was cordial. Hillary Clinton's obviously trying to court her because she knows that she's very important to the progressive base.
She apparently did not ask her to endorse her presidential candidacy.
But she's certainly in the process of courting her endorsement sort of in a more surreptitious way. And, you know, Liz Warren's clout has only been increasing even in the Senate. So it's not.
I bet she was promised something.
Oh,
probably.
I bet.
That's what I bet.
I'm not at all surprised to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Bet she was promised a lot.
I bet she was.
I bet she was threatened secretly, too.
I don't know about that.
I just feel like there's like this weird kiss the ring mentality with the Clintons that feels very much like not like they're openly threatening people. I don't think that they're doing that. Right. I think they probably are lovely people to some degree. But I think that there's sort of like an unspoken threat to their actions because they're so powerful.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, Bill can get kind of testy and I think people are a little scared of him. And Hillary is someone who is sort of like, she's like the nice, you know, he's like sort of like jovial unless he's grumpy. And she's sort of like the one who smooths everything over.
Sure.
But they're both sharks. So like, I feel like everyone knows this. And so like, there's sort of like this undercurrent of threat because they can destroy your political career.
Sure.
They literally have that power.
Yeah.
So in any case, Hillary Clinton has seen that Liz Warren is sort of important to be sort of like in the, because they didn't know each other.
No. Yeah. Right.
Well, they are smart about that. The Clintons are very smart about that.
Yeah.
And I think that she probably knows that she's got to figure out how to make some transition on economic policy.
If
she wants to be even like not laughed off the national stage. But I don't see how she does it without looking mean and like she's
insincere.
Absolutely
insincere.
All of those words.
Mm-hmm. Hypocritical, even.
I mean, very hypocritical. But I mean, there's just like not a... there's not a root there for her.
No.
Not a root to populism.
No, I just
can't
agree.
Find it.
Nope.
Meanwhile, I just saw this... There was a poll that came out, I think today, that was sort of interesting and irrelevant to everything that we've just been talking about. But only interesting to me, and I think interesting to me specifically as a New Yorker.
Sure.
About the... And maybe speaking, though, sort of like more broadly to how international politics and foreign policy politics, domestic, you know, our sort of domestic sort of impressions of foreign policy have been changing over the last few years, because it was a poll that asked people whether they feel more sympathetic to Israelis or Palestinians in the Middle East struggle.
And it's been a huge swing in the last year.
Huge swing. It used to be that you could not, as a Democrat or human being, say that you didn't unequivocally support Israel. The number of people of Democrats who said that they support Israel or that they are more sympathetic towards Israelis than Palestinians dropped by like 10 points 10%. In a year.
Yeah, it's less than half, actually.
It's less than half. And they say, you know, part of it could be that Netanyahu has sort of become part of this political game for the conservatives.
Right.
The Israeli approval rating among conservatives has just like skyrocketed.
It wasn't just that, though.
No, I think it was the Gaza campaign.
Absolutely was. It 100% was.
I mean, that was such a, that looked so cruel. As the news rolled in, and there was no way to spin it so that it didn't seem cruel, even if you sort of understood the mentality that led to it, that it made it very hard to feel like the sort of rhetoric that we've been getting out of Israel was as true as, you know, we had sort of last believed. And I've talked about this with friends who live in D.C., because it used to be in D.C. you couldn't say anything that bad about Israel, or you would just be like kicked out of the world.
Yeah.
And that is, there is like suddenly debate going on within D.C. Suddenly, and especially on the left, people have sort of been like, okay, like obviously we don't want anyone to be hurt or killed, but like this doesn't seem to be the issue that it used to be, and it doesn't seem like it's being presented the same way. But so I think
and the Republicans are in favor of Israel for an entirely different situation.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, I think that it has become a conservative issue where I've always thought it should be a conservative issue. I mean, it's. Loving war is a conservative thing, so approving of any country's actions, right or wrong, whether or not they're violent, is the kind of thing conservatives do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, regardless of the region, like, that's a conservative thing. Like, having the sense that, like, you want everyone to sort of, like, not get a fair shake and not be subject to violence is a thing.
And not leaving room for gray area in a debate is also a very conservative thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and that's what the debate over the future of Israel, over the Middle East, has been like for years.
Right.
It's been very frustrating, I think, for a lot of us on the left, feel like no war is really that justified.
Yeah.
And so that's been a very frustrating thing. But so it's sort of interesting to see that this is morphing slowly into a conservative bastion.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm sort of I've wondered when that was going to happen, but it's happening.
Like
so I accurately predicted it, and now you can know I was right, which is my favorite part of any podcast. Yeah. Now, here's something that you may not have realized: we're in the midst of a secret, long-term secession
movement
that
apparently
is happening without our consent or knowledge.
The only person who knows about it is
Ron
Paul's
an expert. Mm-hmm. First of all, Ron Paul is a man who was speaking at an event called Breaking Away, the Case for Succession.
Interesting.
So if you were wondering if that's a type of event that you could find Ron Paul at, now you know. It was put on by the Mises Institute, which is a libertarian institute slash think tank slash crazy pants organization.
Air quote think tank.
Air quote, yeah. Think in air quotes. Uh-huh.
Yep.
It might be a tank of some sort. We don't know.
Sure.
It might be a crazy tank.
Yeah, idiot tank. Yeah.
An idiot tank, yeah. But so he was asked, he was delivering a speech about succession, I guess.
Yeah.
And said, I would like to start off by talking about the subject, and the subject is succession and nullification, the breaking up of government. And the good news is, it's going to happen. It's happening.
It's happening. It's happening right now.
Yeah. Turns out.
Oh, my.
That all of this gridlock in Congress is just a prelude to the entire country breaking apart.
Well,
soon, we're going to stop following federal law.
That's his hope.
That's his hope.
Yeah.
These states that have passed legalizing marijuana laws are leading the way.
Yep.
Who knew that Colorado was so groundbreaking in that regard? But so, in any case, naturally he referred to the Federal Reserve because libertarians are obsessed with the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the Federal Reserve is like the one thing that you can get like that's such a boring topic.
Right?
Like, I get, like, sure, legalize marijuana. I don't care. It sounds fine. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't want to have a discussion about the Federal Reserve with anyone.
No.
I don't give a shit about the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
It's just about money. It's like, that's not helping it. That's not an interesting topic.
No.
It's not. So in any case, if you were wondering if that's happening all around you, it is. So just get ready.
Be on the lookout for that.
I would still recommend voting up until that point, because I just think it's important to vote.
I agree.
Yeah. Meanwhile, a South Dakota Republican in the House of Representatives there.
Oh, yes. He's thinks that Planned Parenthood is really bad, as all Republicans do, but he took it one step further this week.
Yeah. His official website has some interesting language about the
trials
and tribulations of living in a state with Planned Parenthood.
Yeah. He said that...
it begins with him talking about ISIS and their revolting methods of execution.
Right, exactly.
I think we can all agree beheadings are gross.
Right. But then he went on and he said, Planned Parenthood abortionists in Sioux Falls are similarly beheading unborn children during
Dismemberment
abortions.
Not a type of abortion.
So compared Planned Parenthood.
Planned Parenthood to ISIS.
To ISIS.
That's a stretch. That's quite a stretch.
That's a stretch.
He is, you might not be surprised to find, proposed a law called the Preborn Infant Beheading Ban.
That's too ridiculous.
Stop
even if you're against abortion, you can't vote, like, you can't take that seriously. Like, you can be pro-life and still not introduce that bill. I mean,
It would ban late-term dilation and evacuation procedures, one of these many anti-latent abortions.
But it imprisons doctors for doing it.
Oh, boy. And also, no one is performing late-term abortions.
He claims that they have, but
it's
not true.
No, but they debunked that. Yeah. So he's just making up facts, as you might not be surprised to find, since he believes that beheading babies is what Planned Parenthood is up to.
Right.
He
probably also thinks the fetuses should have gun rights, too.
No, I wouldn't be surprised to think that. But I'm here to say he's wrong.
I'm here to agree with you.
Meanwhile, speaking of further lawmakers that don't understand anything about reproduction, this is the greatest story that happened
today. This was one of these stories where, like, it's so funny because, like, I sent this to Lila and I was like, put this on the doc. I was just, like, sending you random things today because I was, like, swamped at work. And she was like, it's already on there. And then, like, 10 minutes later, my mom sent it to me and she was like, make sure to talk about this on the podcast. And I was like, We got it.
It's covered.
It's under control. Because this guy who is in the Idaho House State Affairs Committee, whatever.
Well, he's a member of the State Affairs Committee.
Right, exactly. So they were debating a bill that would prevent doctors from prescribing abortion pills unless they had met the patient in person.
Right.
So he had some interesting questions at this panel, basically. Not really familiar with female anatomy, at all.
No, yeah. He asked if a woman can swallow maybe a small camera so that doctors can conduct a remote gynecological exam.
Right, as if because something you know that you pills, put in your mouth.
Right, when you swallow them, end up in your vagina. You know that.
No.
That's not how pills work. That's not how
anatomy works. No.
One place that nothing that you swallowed ends up is in your vagina.
Right.
That's a different place.
If you're swallowing something that ends up there, you need more than a gynecological exam.
You need surgery.
You might be dead.
You're most likely dead. There's not really any other way to describe that.
No.
So, in any case, within seconds, his Wikipedia page had been updated to say, like, you know, it said under education, like where he went to school, and then, like, you know, February 25th, 2015 was the day that he learned that when women swallow pills, they don't end up in their vagina.
I know. Well, and the woman who was testifying, who he asked this of, I mean, it was a woman, it was a doctor, and I don't know how she reacted.
Right.
She answered that would not be possible, which is accurate, but I mean, like, I'm sure she was probably taken aback by having to answer such a question.
I feel like if you are on an expert panel for some sort of rando state abortion /
you probably are expecting anything like this.
I mean, this is this is the kind of misunderstanding that leads you to think that women shut all that down when they get raped. Like this is a man who is not familiar with women or anatomy in general. Any kind of anatomy.
Nope.
Because that's not even a thing that could be said for men. There's no comparable thing for men.
If there's one thing that I don't know a lot about, it's lady parts.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, sure.
But I know this.
No, because you probably had basic anatomy.
I did.
Taught to you at some point in your life.
Yeah.
It's not hard to know.
Nope.
But here we are. A grown man who represents other citizens in a state legislature. Oh, no. He doesn't know about it.
Nope.
And then finally.
Oh, boy.
Oklahoma.
They're hell-bent on not teaching their children.
Right.
There in Oklahoma. They want to keep the population as stupid as it currently is.
Right.
That's what they're up to. They've already eliminated Common Core standards, so they don't have standards that the public schools have to keep up to.
Currently, you can just teach anything in the public schools, but one thing you can't teach is AP American History.
Nope.
They're not going to stand for that. It's not pro-America enough.
Not enough.
American history is just not providing a flattering enough portrait of America for them.
No.
And that, I think, is by design, because American history is not that flattering when you actually look at it.
No.
That's oftentimes, it's not a very flattering thing.
Yeah.
But they, I think, believe that you should only, and this is, I think, an argument for why you have to study history, because if you don't study history, then you end up thinking that history has to be taught to you only positive things have to be taught to you in history.
Yeah.
And then you go and eliminate educational standards further, thinking that only positive things should be taught to other people too.
Right.
And then at a certain point, you erase the memory of how stupid it was to erase educational standards in the first place.
Well, and
then
then
you have stupid people.
And in terms of history specifically, like you can't do this. Like, this is not what you have to, if you're teaching history, you have to teach what actually happened. And the thing that I would say to all of these people is that if you want America to be exceptional, then A, you have to have a smart citizenry, and B, you have to know
your history.
You have to know how you fucked it up once before.
Exactly.
Like, that's the way to not do it.
That's why we study history.
That's why we study history.
If you're wondering how me and Brent are routinely making accurate predictions about the course that America is taking, it's because we know where America came from.
That's right.
That's it. And also, I understand that to some degree, all history is politicized. The way that, if Howard Zinn taught us anything, it's that the way that history is taught is political to a very large degree. The way, that's why in the South, when they teach that the Civil War was the War of Northern Aggression, that is a very different war than the Civil War that we learn about in the North.
Right, because you can't learn about history without context.
It doesn't happen in a vacuum.
It's whatever context.
Right.
You're being taught to
do it. The thing that frustrates me about this bill specifically is that it's not calling for, like, a revised kind of history to be taught. They're just going to try to stop teaching history.
They don't want to teach it.
It's not showing America in a positive enough light. Right, so they don't want
cancel it.
Right. Like, I get how history often gets framed in ways that benefit the victors and, you know, whatever. Like, totally. We all learn that about history.
Right.
If you want to know the history of the Cuban Revolution from a Cuban person, get a very different story than what we learn in the American schools.
Right.
Like, that's how history teaching works.
Yeah.
But, like, the plan is not ever to just, like, stop teaching it. You still need to know it.
Yeah, you gotta
know. You don't have, any place to, like, build your understanding of things from if you don't know it.
This is catching on, though, too, because who was it? Was it Georgia or Alabama or something?
Georgia.
Oh, yeah. Georgia State Senate introduced a resolution that rejects a new version of the AP history course recently. A lot of conservative states are sort of, like, thinking about not teaching AP history any longer.
Yeah.
Because it's not pro-America enough.
Well, and also it doesn't... I think, confirms that a lot of their values have not worked for us in the past.
Well, right.
You know, it's like if you never study why trickle-down economics didn't work in the 20s, you may not understand why it's not going to work again.
And also, if you don't know history, like, if your version of history, there's also a wrong version of history.
And
they are also having a lot of wrong versions of history, too. One of the things that I read that they were mad about was that they didn't speak enough specifically about, like, the impact of religion on the founding fathers, which they didn't have.
No.
So, I mean, they were deists, a lot of them, but I mean, you know, this is the thing that just sort of, like, you know, Republicans are wrong about a lot of the time. And this is, we can talk about historical context for a lot of things, but, like, they want to teach wrong facts.
Yeah.
You definitely shouldn't do that. I'd rather you cancel it.
Right.
Okay?
Don't teach, but, like, the point is that, like, if you know a wrong fact and then someone's like, you're like, hey, here's this wrong fact. And someone's like, actually, that's a wrong fact. At least you've had a conversation about history. If you know nothing, then you don't even have the beginning of an understanding of anything. There's no conversation to be had with anyone where you learn the right fact. You just sort of, like, know nothing.
Right.
You're just a person who doesn't understand anything about human nature or existence.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's already too much the case in Oklahoma and Georgia.
I was just about to say, like, then they should stay where they are.
Exactly.
And just have a go of it.
They're planning to.
Rotten go of it.
Yes. Hopefully they can do that without our tax dollars.
Stay dumb, Oklahoma. Stay dumb.
Currently they're not.
You guys, stay geniuses.
Yeah.
Listen
to us next week and every week.
Yeah.
For the rest of your lives.
That's right.
Because we'll be here talking about 2016 and every election after.
Maybe Obamacare.
Maybe Obamacare. We might throw that in. At some point, there'll be another jobs report, and I'll be mad about it, but we'll talk about it.
It'll be soon.
Yeah.
The month's almost over.
Oh, yeah.
Put those things together.
Paying rent catches me by surprise every single time.
Yeah.
It's the jobs report does the same.
Paying rent catches me by surprise, but the jobs report never does.
Never does. Always know to expect a jobs report.
That's right.
We will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.